morning, Neil and Lachlan will be telling us about the digital records transition journey that the Macquarie University has been embarking on over the last few years. So please join with me in welcoming Neil and Lachlan.
Thanks very much and good morning. I hope traditional kind of a bit of my journey and a journey through our Hall of Records is what I'm going to talk to you about this morning. My background is in building very large data warehouse systems for mainly communications companies. So I deal mainly with the databases, and that's my sort of expertise and background. So moving across into the file storage systems and the documents area and the digital stuff is actually quite interesting. And so that's partly, I guess, why I wanted to go back to the university 3.5 years ago, was I really wanted to get interested into the unstructured world of documents, which is something which I hadn't really spent a lot of time thinking about. We were more focused on, I suppose, mobile communications and what was happening there. So I took on a role as Director of Information at the time. We were largely operating in spreadsheets and I suppose silo-driven shared drives. So everybody had different S drives, but no one could sort of share calendars or share documents. So it was a pretty difficult situation they got themselves into at the university. And we had a situation where not very different departments. So sort of Faculty of Science was all PC-based, Arts was all Mac-based. So we had a number of operating systems, a number of problems in that space. So that was a bit of sort of background. So I joined up. It was a challenging join up. It was not an easy start because you were sort of changing your mindset to a ubiquitous service across many different operating systems and trying to deliver to those communities a standardized service. It's a very different situation as opposed to where you have a standard operating environment, standard desktop, standard browser. Nowadays, people can turn up with anything. So our thinking changed about 3.5 years ago, and partly because we had the iPad launched about 3.5 years ago, and our vice chancellor at the time said, I want everything to work on this. So that was a fairly challenging situation to confront a brand new mobile device, which was entirely interesting and easy for users to adapt to. And also our students were coming to campus with these devices, and so things started to change quite quickly, and our thinking changed. Libraries have changed dramatically, and one of those, that's a sort of state-of-the-art library, so everything is serviced and retrieved, and the books are buried underground. I couldn't quite get my head around that for quite some time, so you don't go to the library, you have to get the books from robots under the ground, and it's a different way of thinking about what library services are like as well. And also you saw in there our hospital, so we have a private hospital up there. They weren't real legs hanging up there, by the way. You might have thought they were real legs. They weren't real legs. They were just... but we obviously have a lot of different customers and communities out there. And what you can see is that these students are on campus every day, and we have 40,000 students, but they generate 850,000 Wi-Fi sessions a week. So that's giving you a sort of sense of, the activity on campus. And we have on campus in a week, we have about 50,000 people visiting because we have a business park, we have Cochlear, we have a number of big companies, and they come onto campus and they actually access a lot of our sort of free Wi-Fi type style services, but also just they are in also having the restaurants, they come onto the campus. So we have quite a lot of community style services there. And we have 2,500 staff, 17 entities, 29 departments, 4 faculties, main faculties in this country. We also have the business school, the MGSM, on the campus, and the Macquarie University Hospital, and the Advanced Medical School. So we've got a big health precinct area where it's surrounded by the pharmaceutical companies, and we also, many of you may have been up and seen the university, but it's quite a busy, active business and interface with the student community. So that's sort of a sense of where we're at with the changes that have happened around Macquarie. It used to be 50 years ago, because we're 50 this year, Market Gardens 50 years ago. And many will remember that it's transformed dramatically in 50 years to where it is now. So I'm going to talk a bit about the approach we took around how we chose technology as well and where we went with. But I'm also going to take you to the approach we adopted as we had that launch of the devices that changed the way that the students interact with us and the way the staff were asking for the services to be delivered. But before that, I'm going to bring up Lachlan, who's going to talk to you about a bit more of the journey. And he's going to do it, it's not in a style called chalkboard.
Thank you very much, Neil, for that. And what I want to talk to you about is our records journey. And we're going back just a little bit in time, but firstly, as Neil was talking about, one of the real problems was silos of information. And we had silos of information in the classic information technology sense about systems not talking to each other, but we also had silos of information in terms of records, central records, faculty records, centres and offices keeping their own records, and also silos of information coming from plain old-fashioned empire building. Information is power, knowledge is power, this is our section's records as opposed to this section's records. So there was an issue about silos of information. Even though we're running a central records operation, and in a sense, part of the change for the records and archives area started when we moved out of what was a registerial or registrar's area and moved into informatics. And the people in informatics started to talk about this sort of silos of information, but they used a different term. They said, we were an island of information. And there's actually a later video where there's a tracking shot of all of our wonderful trim files with all their medical record numbers and nice sort of labels, and there's a voiceover saying, you know, the problem of the university is an island of information. Well, and this was early sort of in 2010, they're talking about islands and water, sort of water metaphors. And suddenly something actually came true, because on Friday night, February 12th, what formed over Sydney, according to the newspapers, was a complex storm which cut a swathe from the northwest all the way through the city to King's Cross and out to sea. Now, the storm caused a set of flash flooding. So, heading towards the records repository was a wall of water this high. And really, a wall of water this high, which flash flooded. Many people don't realise that Macquarie University campus is actually built on the Mars Creek Valley and is constructed sort of landscape, and there's quite a high water table underneath the earth. Although there's been a lot of measures to try and stop this, but we had what you'd call a very complex weather event that was coupled with a second weather event for the Saturday and Sunday of that weekend, where the Bureau of Meteorology actually recorded that there was a complex two weather systems joined together, a high and a low pressure over New South Wales, and for that weekend there was constant rain. So when the water hit and went into the building, it went down into the building and went through the whole of the records repository. But it didn't submerge the records, it just went through the floor of the compactors, which was quite bad. Now, in terms of disaster operations, the university didn't really respond to it until, say, the Monday. But, of course, this weekend was also Valentine's Day weekend, so I think everybody was preoccupied with whether or not they were, you know, pursuing things, or they were desperate and dateless. So just actually preoccupied. So the Monday morning we found out everything. Now, it's very strange with the disaster planning. You have the best disaster plans in the world, the counter-disaster strategy, but there you are, and there the record repository particle board floor, which supports the major compactus containing 6,000 boxes of records, is just swelling up. So we actually had to have, and let me go to my notes, because we still live partly in a paper world. Sorry, Neil, I have to use paper sometimes. But because we worked out a set of factors after all this torrential rain. And I should say. So we had some immediate things to do. That's the word I needed to remember, immediate. So we had some immediate things to do, and that was to launch a building project straight away to rip that floor up in the records repository. Now, university has a large development facilities operation, and we have links to construction companies on site. So we could deploy something like that in an operational sense. Now, that's fine. We had to get a disaster recovery company on site straight away. No records were wet. They were just starting to grow mould because their whole repository had turned into rather a giant hothouse. So we had to put high-speed air movers, dehumidifiers, a great deal of machinery in. We had to turn to facilities and say, redo your electricity so we've got industrial strength electricity to pump through into this basement. Now, there was a lucky break for us that everything in the repository were the university's archives and records in disposal boxes under disposal and retention authorities. We had two operational areas for student records and for corporate records that were untouched by the flood. Okay. So we had these things, but we'd also, back early in, say, 2002, 2003, had a huge sort of a negotiation with our insurers to increase the sum insured of our collection. Because if we didn't have a proper sum insured on a records collection, you might as well forget a disaster recovery operation. But little did we know, we'd set up the situation where we stopped the humidity from increasing, and we got it to a level where we stopped the mould growing. We still had mould-covered records. But really, then that led to a period of negotiation, and we were very fortunate when Neil came and joined the university, because the negotiations with the insurer and the loss adjuster were extremely intricate. And I think that's the way it did. And Neil brought a lot of corporate experience to those negotiations, because it was many months later before we started a proper let's move the records out and fix them. But part of the way to fix the records wasn't just about we're going to treat the records and put them back in storage and then get them back to people. I went back and I checked this out, that from the very beginning there were the ideas that we should digitise the records. We should actually digitise the archival collection. Now, that fed into some of the negotiations and to operate that, but we had the idea that we would digitise. Now, we were fortunate that the disaster recovery company we used could actually digitise records as well. And there's a strong economy of scale that at the recovery centre, your records are there being treated. Well, yes, they can be digitised, otherwise having to be sent off to a third party, it'd be far too costly. But digitisation of these records is really important, because this idea, because it actually helped the people in the records section, it's an absolutely stunning thing or destabilising thing for any group of people working with records to have a large part of that collection absolutely under threat and impacted, and then having to rearrange the service and certain things. So digitisation was very important. Now, part of this was that Macquarie University, in a sense, was wanting to use open source programs, and it was wanting to use an open source platform called Alfresco to build an actual platform to actually digitise records into. So I think it's sort of the process too is painstaking, but we had a thing that the university chose a product called Alfresco. They were looking at another product called Nuxio, but they chose Alfresco. And as we were recovering the records and digitising them, they were also building this enterprise content management platform. We had a digital component to trying to actually restore this recovery operation. So I think but you still got a large block of records. And actually, going on to start digitizing records and then having a digitization program, which means you digitize and scan more records, you actually get more boxes. You actually get more paper. So a fourth part of our recovery was we had to do something about storage of records. The university had never built a warehouse in its history, and whenever it was going to build a warehouse or an operations, and we actually had to find somewhere to put the records once they're treated. And there'd been a long 6-year tick-tacking. We need space for these records. We actually need to find some space. Can you give us more shelf space? This is inadequate. Tick-tacking the university really wasn't working. And while we were negotiating, especially when there was negotiations going on with the insurer and the loss adjuster, there's also work being done on a commercial contract for off-site storage. And we went fully in operation to off-site storage with Access Records Management. We picked them. And we have 6,000 boxes of the fully treated records off-site, an off-site storage facility. So we went there, as a sense, and we used the off-site storage facility to set up sub-accounts as more records are digitised and more records have to go out to off-site storage. We have a small transshipment area we built on campus as well, just to move some of the records through. But you have a logistical operation as well as you have a digital operation. So you're almost living in two or three worlds. So that takes us really to almost a new way of doing things, in a sense, because our work's bounded by four systems. There's two systems at the core. There's one, there's Alfresco, which is our Truth platform. We've called it Truth, and you'll probably see that Truth, the name used on the platform, more in Neil's slides coming up. But Alfresco is our enterprise content management. We're still running a TRIM system because we have hard copy records. We also have an O'Neill system. That's the web interface system with off-site storage. And we have a One Help ticket system because everything is coming through via tickets. So we run a four-system split across an operational day to retrieve records, get records back to digitise. One of the important rules we're coming up with, we're working, say, to digitise records, where every student file from 2014 onwards will be digital. But we've drawn a line in the sand, so the previous records, 2013 backwards, they're still hard copy and being managed as such, because if they represent students who left the university, we don't need to actually digitise them. If they return, we'd pull them back and run a scan on demand service. But we'd still manage large blocks of records under a retention disposal authority that way, because scanning everything is frankly far too expensive, in a sense, and you want to move forward with certain things. But the new way of doing things, it's a challenge. It's been a challenge because it takes you really out of a comfort zone, but it takes you out of a thinking zone, thinking that there are a set of records here and there's a set of records, and if we've got a repository, it's all okay. In a sense, there's nothing. That's a very good operation at one level, but it's just wasn't fitting with where the university was going, where the university wanted to go in terms of systems, corporate Gmail, a wiki instead of SharePoint for collaboration. But in some ways, I wouldn't have had the flood to begin it off with, because really we're becoming an island. It literally became an island of information, but that was more to do with the flood waters. But that's pretty much the story.
Thank you, Lachlan. I think it was interesting to hear the perspective from a records and archives person on how that change happened. And I've got to say, Lachlan did really embrace the change. It's been great, because I couldn't have done this without him. You know, the change was really hard, because not only do we have a disaster,
fortunately, you had the foresight to ensure. Otherwise, we would have been even more of a disaster because we wouldn't have had anywhere to actually do the work and pay for the work. So that's an interesting example of sometimes foresight helps you to the next stage of the solution that we're trying to get to in the end of the day. And it's a hybrid, because some people will always hang on to paper, particularly academics. They love their books, they love their papers, their offices are full of books. They don't, only a fair sprinkling actually are purely digital. So we are living with a sort of an elderly community of academics that, you know, emeritus professor is not going to listen to me, right? They are, you know, very clever people, they write, and their life is their writing. So it's quite an interesting eclectic community for that reason. I just want to say, the one thing I didn't know when I actually took the job and did the job interview, they didn't tell me about the flood. The first week in, I found out that we had a flooded basement, and there were these, you know, fans running and everything, and there was humidity, and I was like, hang on a minute, you didn't tell me you had this going on. So that was a moment of truth. So moving on to where we went, because it took a lot longer to do this than you might imagine. Digitalization is incredibly slow, and particularly we had to, you know, despore and dry the paper. We also then had to scan it, but also OCR it. And I'm sure some of you experienced OCRing is incredibly slow. So if you have a large repository that you're digitizing and you want to make it text readable, you are going to be in that process for maybe a year or more, depending on who and how fast you can go and how much you want to pay. So we came up with the system we were going to land our data into, which is this thing we call Truth, sometimes nicknamed Struth. But it's interesting because we've had some mixed adoption rates depending on the advocates and the teams. We've got some very strong advocates like our MGSM, the business school, who pretty much did all their own work on their own. Some very large customers have come in, international departments and stuff like that. So we'll run through some of the customers. But the principle about the choice of why we went with Alfresco, firstly, we had a criteria of it must be agnostic to its browser. So Explorer, Chrome, Firefox, Safari, you name it. There's about seven on the market, including mobile like Opera. So you've got to make yourself standards-based. That is a particularly difficult thing for the software industry to swallow, because they like to be proprietary and they don't like to be standards-based, even though they wrote the standards. And so once you put that up against the software, a lot of the big companies drop away. The other stuff we said is that we want to be available on any platform, so from iPad all the way through, so it's not tied to a particular, you know, type of operating system or thin client software. So we said it has to be available on any device. So again, it has to be browser-enabled, standards-based, available on any device, which then pushes you down into the next sort of criteria around this, which is how the actual structure of the repository is available across many, many platforms. And that means you're talking about different types of technology interfaces like IMAP and SIFS, those sort of standards. And you start realizing that it breaks down quite quickly, and there's not a lot of companies that can do this. And often they're trying to lock you in for the long term. And so we get with Alfresco because it is open source, and it gives us what we call the variable risk profile, which means you can choose to go as far as you want and develop with that company as much as you want. So we're a premium partner with Alfresco in Australia, but we also extensively, you know, do other work with them on other things. So we've come up with quite a few things, but we also had to push this to the community, as this is all about storing, sharing, and finding your information, which is kind of simple. It's on the front. This is actually a login page for our main site. And one of those challenges of store, find, and share, I'm going to cover in a minute. It's about understanding how search works and understanding how federated search might work in the future. It's understanding also about what a link is. And that's a very important concept of the web. And so fortunately our former CIO was very experienced in this because he had run Objective Corporation as their CTO. So he had a very strong understanding of the web and the web technologies, but also had a good understanding of how these repositories are built and where they're going. So he wanted to do al fresco, and I actually thought it was reasonable. It fitted the criteria. So on our documents and records, we get a lot of documents that drafts and versions eventually become the record, effectively. But a lot of people are working on stuff. We now have inside the repository all the legal matter management. Our archives going back to the 50 years, which really came from the digitization work that Lachlan was speaking at, which includes photographs and also includes all sorts of newsletters and early student magazines and stuff like that. Photo libraries in there, which has been used extensively in our Macquarie at 50 work, which we've just been launching, and it's got all the early photographs of the students. So it's been very handy, the repository, to actually build a kind of a whole interaction for people to put things together for the Macquarie at 50. So it's really, I think, benefited the university a lot. We also have some of the departments and faculties. Some are more advanced than others. Faculties too tend to run their own processes for everything, not just this. And they tend to be, so we're a central facility. We provide them the offsite storage. We also provide them some digitization services. We provide the platform, but they still like to sometimes keep themselves to themselves. So, it's a sort of two-way street. We also have MGSM. MGSM came on quite quickly. They'd outsourced all their IT services back to the university in 2010, 11. And part of it was taking this repository on. They were the first to do student digital records. They were also the first to digitize a repository. We found their records in a hockey shed. So I'm quite glad we got them out of there and put them in long-term storage. It was a dry hockey shed. But it's not. See, that's what tends to happen. People tend to put things where they shouldn't go. So they're now safely inside the repository, all digitized. Project documents, we took the full archives or a property area and put them in there. They're still, they tend to run Microsoft Project and they tend to run SharePoint. That's fine for us, but they tend to deal a lot with external property people and developers. So that's what their sort of common tool set in the property industry is. But we take the archive when they finish the projects and put them into the long-term repository. We do student records as the one this year. We've also got the history for some of the years from the past, but we also have we've got 500 digital student records in the system this year. And it just keeps accumulating. So that means they're birthed digitally, not generated in any paper. We birth them digitally. Policies in there and international student applications, we get about, probably in the range of about 25,000 applications in paper coming through our websites for international students a year. And all of that automatically goes straight into our Truth platform. So it's actually, as the email comes, it strips the attachments and drops them in the platform. So we actually capture it as it comes incoming on mail. And it has an automatic filing system, which helps everybody as well. So you can put the student, as long as it's got the ID of the student in, it will automatically file it to that ID for the student. So that's helped. That's actually one of probably the biggest wins we've had, is automatic sorting. So you can just drag a load of files, as long as it sees the number anywhere in the file name, it will automatically sort it. And the last one we're working through at the moment is HR records, which we're currently at digitization and OCRing. They'll probably finish sometime this year. And that's partly, I suppose, that they now trust us with, I suppose, advanced sort of scanning and digitization work, whereas before we didn't really have that option to offer them. But we've experienced and learnt a lot by doing a disaster recovery. So now we actually feel that we can provide those services more ubiquitously. Going to the next point, I was going to say, one of the criteria, this was an important criteria that we put up to the software vendor that we chose, which was a durable, persistent link, please. Not just a link, but a durable, persistent link, which is a concept of a sort of software design principle called RESTful, which is very much part of Web 2.0 thinking. It's the next version of the web, which is about, if I provide a link to you, I want that link to never break. So in 2 years' time, you click on it, it will never break. It's a persistent, durable link. That's very hard for the current software, a lot of software today. If I move an object in a repository around, whether it be an MP3 or a document or even a data object, it should carry its URL with it. It should be remain with it, so it shouldn't break when I move it from one area to another area. The permission structure might change, but the actual persistency of the link, the actual thing you see in your browser, will never change. So that was the principle that we wanted to apply. We had to build this because it's not available in most software. And we built this with about 5 different software companies, which, because we're all browser-enabled software, so this is from our business intelligence platforms through to our ticketing systems. We always ask for this. You rarely get it. But some companies, I think, well, have actually done this now. So there's quite a few companies that have gone this way. It means that information becomes more referenceable. It means it doesn't break that easily and people can find it again easily. So it's always worth checking with your software vendor whether they can support what's called a RESTful URL or a persistent link. So now we've got the 62,000 university records in the system. That's about 5.6 million pages, 1.5 million files, and 1,200 users. So that's about half the university is sort of all registered in the system. We're enterprise licensed, so we can take as many people as we want. We're not yet sure. I think some people will never use the system, but we've got a lot of people who use it daily. And it's part of key business processes now. And if you attach yourself to key business processes, you automatically become part of the overall enterprise operations. And what next? Now, this is something Lachlan and I worked up a list of things. We just wrote it down. We thought, well, we can support all digital asset types. So we can support movies and MP3 already. So that platform is available. The platform does support all the asset types. We do have things like the media monitor comes in from outside and stuff. So we could actually take on more different types of asset, which is a bit similar to, I think, some of the state records work, is that you have to be amenable to the file type. You don't know what's going to happen in the future. You don't know what file type you're going to be. So as long as you're with a vendor that supports more open standards, they will adopt it quite quickly. Scalability and performance, I reckon we'll get to 10 million by the end of the year, so we are looking at the infrastructure redesign towards the end of the year, maybe next year, depending on how we go. We find performance requires deep analysis to understand the performance characteristics of things. You'll be surprised to find that often you can fix it without having to change hardware. Often it's just a very deep analysis that will get you understanding where performance problems might come from. We have our records management module developed. I guess we choose how and when we want to roll that out, and mainly it's with Lachlan's guidance on this. Google Docs, I'm sure you're all challenged with this. This is a bit of a runaway train. Dropbox and Google Docs and Google Drive are out of it. They're like a sort of, they get ahead of us in the enterprise world. And so we'll often find people who are using Dropbox extensively. Not part of any policy or anything, it's just because academics tend to share stuff internationally. They tend to share with other universities, so Dropbox is almost part of their culture. So we have Google as a partner, and we have Google Gmail, we also have Google Docs and Google Drive. So we're looking at how those systems integrate in the long term for search, recovery, and making sure that we can support people and provide an alternative to the SkyDrives and the Dropbox, which they will alternatively switch to. So that's sort of like the horse is bolted, it's gone. We have to just keep providing an equivalent service or something as good and work out how to integrate. The other thing we work through is more campus-wide workflows. We're working at the moment on an academic promotions workflow. Academics, when they go for promotion, they submit their entire body of work. So it's like 5 books and an enormous amount of material. So they have to go away and collect it all, and then they have to put it through a workflow. And it's very laborsome for them. So we're providing a new workflow for academics to put their stuff into one place and for the committees to review. And we're also looking at integration with other key systems. So we have our CRM system, and we have Wiki, and our student system, which tends to be a bit more sort of legacy-orientated, some of those, but the student system anyway is. And so it's a bit more challenging how to get material to and from it. And I think that is everything. So thank you very much.